Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Record growth of the past decade, UWF is proposing a stadium construction plan that represents a transformative investment for the University of West Florida and Escambia County. The multi-use outdoor facility located on the UWF campus will significantly enhance the athletic department's capacity to serve students, the broader campus community, and Escambia County.
So you have Martha Saunders going in front of the Tourism Development Council, talking with her about the TDT tax money, which is the money that we get from bed taxes, from when people stay in hotel rooms. It's 5% basically, and that's, we've talked many times, it's a lot of money. It's a, I don't know, it's a couple dozen million dollars a year, if I remember correctly. And the idea is that the money is supposed to go to enhance or improve tourism. A lot of the money gets spent through Visit Pensacola to market and advertise coming here to Pensacola. We have arguments over whether it does or does not appropriately go to pay, for example, for the Chappie James Memorial, the plane and the statue and the plaza. But Martha Saunders is here representing UWF and saying, hey, this is a good spend, or at least a partial spend, on having us have a stadium, a new stadium. Remember the Argos used to play at Wahoo Stadium for a while, and many of us, myself included, were optimistic that they would stay there because I loved the venue. It's a good size, 5,000. It's a good interactive space for the Wahoos. It's a great partnership between downtown and the university. Instead of, you know, having them play on campus, which is a much more normal environment, of course, then, you know, where it's kind of isolated to itself, because UWF is, even though it's in town, it's not in town. And as many people joked in prior years, it's kind of out in the woods. And it's still out there, up there, you know, it's not downtown. And there was something about having them play downtown that I always loved. But the decision was made a couple of years ago to move them onto campus, onto the temporary field. And now they want to, which we, of course, knew. Of course, we knew this was coming, that they would eventually want to build a full-blown stadium.
This facility will be a community asset that can serve as a venue to host band competitions, outdoor concerts, high school football games, as well as other community events.
And that's part of the appeal here is going to be that it's not just for UWF football games. It's going to be for other kinds of things.
Over a five-year period, UWF Athletics has driven nearly $250 million in total economic output, while the university drives approximately $1.4 billion every year.
Of course. I mean, the university has a massive economic impact in this area. But if you're going to talk about, and this is going to sound like I'm critical of the plan, I'm not really, but the size of the impact of the university isn't really the issue. The question is, what's the size of the impact on tourism, bed tax, and the quality of life experience in the area of having a full formal stadium as opposed to having the sort of temporary ad hoc situation that they have right now? That's the real relevant thing. You know, the question in front of the TDC is not, do we believe the university is important? You know, of course. The question is, do we believe that having a football stadium is important and important enough to spend bed tax money on? That's the real question. So I think the, you know, the fact that it's a big university with lots of import, it's not really the question. It's much more focused on that specific issue of the change proposed, which is to build a full-blown stadium.
Our growth brings people to this community for both short-term stays in many of our hotels and longer stays, as many of our students will become part of your workforce.
And, of course, that's true, that the university feeds a lot of growth in the area, or at least a lot of, you know, adults grow up out of UWF and come to work here in Pensacola area. The real question is going to be, does it generate room nights? Does it, you know, bring people to town? And I actually thought some of the comments, not so much by Judy Bentz or Jeff Gerlach, who is the comptroller of the university, weren't as persuasive to me, honestly, as Judy Bentz's comments. We'll get to that in a second. But as I say, Jeff Gerlach, who is the comptroller, you know, so more the numbers and management kind of guy.
The Haas Center economic impact showed over a five-year period. The football program had a total economic impact of $23.3 million, along with the facility's construction would be over $124 million.
Of course, that's one time the facility's construction overall, I mean, you know, spin-off money, but still, those are starting to talk about the numbers that matter. And then how many rooms, how many stays in the area?
The initial program goals and baseline listed, we were conservative. We're trying to project the future. After reviewing our data, we identified a way to adjust our baseline to include the spectators through using a program. We also feel that this upped it to 10,219 room nights, that our goal of 20% to 12,263 is still conservative, but one we can achieve.
So that's for the board. Usually that's going to be the big question is, does it bring people to town? How many room nights can you count? And then there's kind of a math formula based on how many more people stay and at 5%, how much money does that spin off and what are you asking for and what will it return and will it actually be a net generator of revenue for the county? That's usually kind of the way this goes. What about the stadium itself? Well, it's going to about double.
The football stadium overview was increased capacity from 3,800, which is what we have now, in a temporary facility that we have to rent and set up most of the facility, internet, restrooms, the whole bit, to move to around a 7,500 seat facility.
Yeah, almost double, which is nice. Is it weird, John? I know you'll appreciate this. You're a, you know, football fan. We're a Division II school.
Right.
Okay. How big should our football stadium be?
I'm saying like five, maybe.
Yeah, so they're saying that 7,500. It's a lot because they sell out now. In fact, they have, you know, they say that they have more than 4,500 right now on average for every game, which is at 3,800, so they're over capacity right now. But how big is your football team's stadium?
Oh, I think we can fit maybe
90, 100.
100.
Yeah, I think U of I fits 110. You know, when I think of a football stadium for a university, that's what I think of.
I think of these massive things,
which are like twice as big as, you know, a baseball stadium. And so when they're like, we're going to build a big stadium for, you know, $45 million, I'm like, oh, how many people? Is it 40,000? Is it 50,000? Well, it's 7,500. Oh. No, but that's on an appropriate scale for UWF. So it just, I just know that was my reaction to it. Is it, you know, yeah, bigger, woohoo. But not really that big, not really, right? But they do want to do some other stuff with it.
One of the things that we hope to do with the stadium is create a visitor center that would also attract for orientations, people coming to campus, create that central spot, the front porch for the university that would also become a great opportunity for people to visit Pensacola. This presents a naming opportunity potential in this construction process.
Interesting, a visitor center. A visitor center. So that the first stop you make when you come to campus would be at the football stadium. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but they seem to know. So the financing, the money.
The stadium budget is approximately $45 million, which is $25 million of an internal institutional loan, $10 million private gift, and $10 million of fundraising. What we're asking for is roughly 4% of the total project cost.
Yeah, which is pretty small, really. $2 million out of a $45 million project is a real small slice. In fact, that winds up being kind of an important element of this conversation because all the members of the council were like, I mean, it's only $2 million. You know, you're not asking for 10. You're not asking for 15 or 20. You're asking for 2 out of a $45 million. Now, $2 million is still money that, for example, the Chappie James people would love to have and a lot of other folks would love to have. But $2 million out of a $45 million project is not really that much. So you look like you want to ask a question.
No, I want to say I just looked up the University of South Alabama's Hancock Whitney Stadium holds 25,000 people because okay. I was there for the Senior Bowl.
Okay.
So I was just
curious. What's Lad Peebles get? Like 10?
No, it's more than that. Lad Peebles is bigger.
The only reason Lad Peebles comes up is because I remember, 33,000 for Lad Peebles. The only reason I remember Lad Peebles is because I remember the false claims after the first Trump rally there, which I attended in person, and it was full and it was 50,000 or 25,000 people. I'm like, That was not 25,000 people.
I was just trying to put it in perspective with just because I went to the Senior Bowl.
Right, right.
And I know the size of that stadium compared to what they're saying at 7,000. So that's why I wanted to bring that up.
Oh, somebody says the other voice is not Jeff Gerlich. It's Dave Scott. I wasn't sure. I thought they introduced him as Jeff Gerlich. So I apologize if I got the name wrong. So thank you for the correction on that. Here's the one thing that I was surprised didn't come up in the conversation. Unless I missed it. And I mean, it's always possible. Parking. Raise your hand if you believe UWF has enough parking. Anybody?
I was like looking around the room here.
I mean, there's only the three of us, but you know, nobody, right? UWF has a parking problem. I mean, it's not a massive problem, but it's, if you go to things on campus, you deal with parking. Now, if you have a student there, you probably have a pass on your car, you know, and if you don't have a pass on your car, well, it's hunt and hope, right? You know, and then it's hope you didn't park in the wrong space, because sometimes it's, let's just say, not the easiest markings to decipher, okay? So one of the things it seemed obvious to me was that if they're going to really do this, and they are, where will people park? Because a bigger stadium means less land available for parking, presumably. I don't know. I haven't seen the design to know if it's going to encroach on that parking lot that's just to the south, where it's kind of right next to the current facility. I would think not, because they just built that whole athletic training and, you know, medicine facility just right. So it's going to be north. I mean, maybe the stadium's going to go on the big grassy knoll northeast of there. You know, there's that giant space where they don't really do anything. It's kind of like useless space where there's like a disc golf course across there and stuff. So maybe going there. But still, the question remains, you know, where are people going to park? I mean, if you're going to double the capacity of the attendees, you're going to have to increase your opportunity to park, right? So I didn't hear that conversation. Parking is expensive. You know, surface lots are highly inefficient. Parking structures are, you know, $10, $20 million kind of enterprises, especially when you're talking about this kind of numbers of people coming. So I don't know the answer to that, but obviously they approved it. Obviously it was unanimous, you know. In fact, it's kind of funny. Charles Baer, who of all people is – there's two city council members on the TDC. One is Charles Baer, one is Jen Brer. And by their own admission, they are the most talkative members of council. Whenever they're around, they're always going to talk first. And it just is. It was actually kind of funny because when David Baer, who's the chair, he says,
open up for discussion. Council members?
Down here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forget.
Look at
more
the
people
way.
Behind me.
Down here. We're always the one who wants to talk.
That's actually true, yes.
Councilwoman?
Thank you. Thank
Both
you.
Jen Brer and Charles Baer with Chair Baer. Don't get confused. I'm so on a tangent right now, but I feel like Judy Benz, who called herself the mother of UW football. Accurate. She opened up by saying,
thank you, Chair Baer. And I appreciate speaking before the council this afternoon.
I think she gave David Baer his Care Bear name.
What I was about to say, Care Bears. You
know, happiness Baer, Love Baer, Recreational Baer, Chair Baer, which is kind of funny because he's always a chair of these different organizations, right? Anyway, so Charles Baer, not to be confused with Chair David Baer, not to be confused with City Councilwoman Jennifer Brer. I kid you not, these are all real people's names. Charles Baer went on like a 7-minute soliloquy about UWF and how important it is. I mean, he was gushing. If anybody's going to be against something, he's against it. And he was, I mean, gushing. I don't know how else to describe it. It kind of caught me off guard. I'm like, what's going on? Anyway, so everybody was eager to show how much they were in support of this, the necessity of it, and so forth. So it passed unanimously. You know, they're going to figure out the exact which cent it comes out and all that later on. But, I mean, you had Daryl Gooden, who's given $10 million. The stadium's going to be named after him. You've got Dick Appleyard was there. Of course, Judy Benz was there. You know, a lot of, like, big players. I mean, Jerry Maygarden was. He didn't speak, but he was there. So, you know, it was a big effort to – it actually kind of caught David Baer off guard, like, oh, my God, there's a lot of people here. We're not used to this. TDC is usually – them and like one person plus staff. 524 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. So that's going to happen. It's a couple of years out before it actually gets done, but that will double capacity. And it will bring a lot of people here. As Judy Benz mentioned, nothing grows a university, nothing grows its reputation, nothing grows its visitors like football. Now, you can complain about that. You can say how inappropriate that is, that, you know, why is football so important? Or you can just realize it is. It just is. Welcome to America. It So you can fight it or you can fund it. I mean, you know, you can compl- well, they should be coming here for the, you know, the theater performances. Yeah, but they don't. You know, they should be coming here to celebrate engineering. Yeah, but they don't. They shouldn't be coming here to for football. But they do. You know, so there you go. 525 on News Radio 92.3. Of course, the news that broke this morning, very early this morning, is the passing of Pope Francis at the age of 88. If you're just getting up this morning, especially if you're Catholic, I know this is a major news story for you. And, you know, I don't know what your thought was, but was as we were watching the development of his health, I actually feared that this would happen a month ago. I feared that when he was really in the hospital with pneumonia and everything else that, you know, that's when I actually suspected that that might be the news any day. I mean, just it just seemed like the illness was protracted and it felt like that. And then, of course, he got better and he got out of the hospital and J.D. Vance meets with him over the weekend and he doesn't say anything or doesn't say much when he's at the Easter service yesterday. And then all of a sudden, Easter's passed and the Pope has also passed away. So they'll be selecting a new, you know, the Catholics will be selecting a new pontiff here in the near future. But that's obviously a huge, huge loss to the religious community and Catholics around the world. I'm Andrew McKay. It's News Radio 92.3.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm ready. Let me just grab my bag.
Sweatpants, huh? Didn't know we were keeping it casual this month.
Yeah, I feel bloated every now and then.
You have to try new Align 3-in-1 Biotic Gummies. They have prebiotics to nourish good bacteria, probiotics to help relieve occasional bloating, and postbiotics for immune support.
All that in one gummy?
Yep. So no sweatpants next time?
Not anymore.
Align 3-in-1 Biotic Gummies for gut health support.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
But of course.
Good morning, 528 here on News Radio 92.3. Yes, in the 1980s, there was a brief time where you could just pull up next to somebody, roll down your window, and say, pardon me, and they'd know exactly what you're talking about. That's how we rolled.
Now, do you have any gray poupon? That's the first thing that came to my head when you said, pardon me.
That's it. That's what I just played. That's it. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. I think everybody at some point back then rolled up to a random vehicle and said that, too. Everybody.
And you expected it. You cherished it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you would wait for it to happen at every stoplight. The Vatican announced the death of Pope Francis earlier this morning, Andrew. Christopher White with the National Catholic Reporter says Francis made an unexpected appearance on Easter Sunday to greet the faithful for, and this, of course, was only about a month now after he was released from the hospital.
You know, his last few appearances were vintage Francis. This was a pope who 12 years ago came in as a maverick, doing it his own way. And we saw him go out as a maverick. He made these surprise visits almost every other day of the past 2 weeks.
And along with yesterday's surprise appearance, he also met over the weekend with Vice President J.D. Vance. Three more states now reporting their first cases of measles this year. Louisiana, Virginia, and Missouri all reporting cases over the weekend. All of those cases were linked to international travel. There's now 27 states with confirmed measles. About 800 cases have been reported so far. And Border Czar Tom Homan defending the deportation of Kilmar Abrego Garcia to El Salvador. Homan said the administration was allowed to deport him under the Alien Enemies Act, even though the administration admitted in court that he was deported due to an administrative error of some type.
You know, I have decided I'm going to stay out of this issue.
That's probably the smart move.
You know, first of all, it's one person. So a massively disproportionate amount of attention is being paid to the case of one person. Second, I don't know who's right. Because the claims about him, I've read some, you know, one version of the story is he's a refugee from the gangs. The Trump administration's version of the story is he's got gang tattoos on his fingers. Like, I don't know. I don't know. The Supreme Court says one thing or, you know, declines to say. And then Alito says, no, they're completely crazy. I can't believe we did this. So, you know, I've got things in Pensacola I'm working on for me personally.
Absolutely.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm CJ Papa. Pope Francis dies today at the age of 88, the first Latin American pope. With a folksy, humble style, wish Happy Easter on Sunday to the thousands in St. Peter's Square. Fox's Jonathan Savage.
He was driven to modernize the Catholic Church after decades of conservative leadership. In a church where lesbian, gay, and bisexual people have often felt unwelcome, Pope Francis requested a more open approach. He said homosexuality was a sin, but not a crime.
Fox's Manuel Rivera.
My heart goes out to the millions of Christians all over the world who loved him. I was happy to see him yesterday, though he was obviously very ill, but I'll always remember him for a homily he gave in the very early days of COVID. It was really quite beautiful. May God rest his soul.
That was on the reaction from Vice President J.D. Vance. Pope Francis was 88. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 69 degrees, cloudy skies here in Pensacola. We'll have a look at our forecast with Brooke Richardson in just a few moments. One person has died after a shooting at a local event center on Saturday. Now that happened Saturday morning around 2:30 a.m. at the 851 Event Center at Delano and Pace. The victim was found near the event center in a parking lot and pronounced dead. So far, there is no word on suspects or a motive in that case. A man has died after being shot by police in Orlando. That happened yesterday morning outside of the Thrive Cocktail Lounge there. Orlando police say Jonathan Angel Flores pulled a gun during a fight and fired around into the air. Officers ordered him to drop that weapon, but he refused. And that's when he was shot. The 38-year-old was taken to the hospital where he died. Also, a police officer hurt after a shooting in Columbia County. Police in Lake City say one of their officers was shot last night at the Annie Maddox Recreation Center. There was an Easter celebration going on at the time when a fight broke out. The officer was taken to the hospital. There's no word on his current condition, but officials there do say that he was awake and communicative with officers and paramedics as he was being transported. Well, Florida State University takes the first steps to try and get back to normal today. Their classes will resume, but the school's also offering students a chance to go remote. The school says they want everybody to get the help and support that they need, but that can mean different things for different students. Meanwhile, flags remain at half staff across the state today. Governor DeSantis announced on Friday he was ordering American and Florida flags to fly at half staff for the victims of last week's shooting at FSU. DeSantis said lowering the flags was in memory of the two people that were killed during the shooting and also to recognize the bravery that was shown by first responders. Flags will remain at half staff until sunset tonight. Well, if you happen to see something big headed in for a landing at NAS Pensacola Friday, you weren't the only one. There's a lot of attention on social media being paid to an Air Force C-5 Galaxy that stopped here Friday afternoon. It was from the 312th Airlift Squadron out of the Travis Air Force Base in California. Channel 3 reports that was here to pick up an Operation Desert Storm FA-18 Hornet to take back to the USS Hornet Museum in Alameda, California. The C-5 Galaxy is the largest aircraft in the U.S. Air Force inventory. It's designed to transport machinery and personnel. It is 534 News Radio 92.3, and let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be looking at a nice day today with temperatures staying warm. We will be looking at a little more cloud cover as we go into your afternoon with a small chance of rain, 20% overall. High near 78 degrees, low tonight near 69 degrees. For Tuesday, about a 30% chance of some pop-up showers, especially inland areas. High near 78. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 69. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now it's 69 degrees in Pensacola. We've got 70 degrees in Gulf Breeze, 65 reported in Milton. Our next news is at 6 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Mack Trucks said it will lay off up to 350 workers at its Lehigh Valley operations plant because of tariffs and other economic factors. A Mack spokesperson said heavy-duty truck orders continue to be negatively affected by market uncertainty about freight rates and demand, possible regulatory changes, and the impact of tariffs. The layoffs will be conducted over the next 90 days. The Chinese Ministry of Commerce said China has warned it will retaliate against countries that cooperate with the U.S. in ways that compromise Beijing's interests. The threat comes as President Trump's administration is reportedly planning to use tariff negotiations to pressure U.S. partners to limit their dealings with China. Ryan Coogler's supernatural horror Sinners finished number one at the box office this weekend, pulling in $45.6 million domestically. A Minecraft movie came in second, raking in $41.3 million in its third weekend to put its domestic total at nearly $345 million. Futures are sharply lower. That's Your Money Now.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR can help you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Bands on the Beach is back. Bring a lawn chair or a towel and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, the White Sands Panhandle Band takes the stage. It's one of the hottest bands in bluegrass country and rockabilly on the Gulf Coast. You'll hear everything from Marty Stewart to Marty Rabin to Charlie Daniels at Bands on the Beach, brought to you by the Santa Rosa Island Authority. Don't bring any pets or glass.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are the dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there, and they say yeah.
Because I am sad to say that one of our own local representatives, Alex Andrade, has decided to interject himself into the mix. He's actually taking shots at our governor. Governor, just so you know, you are in DeSantis country, and these people, they know Alex Andrade well. I don't have to tell them that Andrade has a history of fighting conservative Republicans. And again, don't take it personally. Chris Smith has actually challenged Representative Andrade to a boxing match this summer. That's how well-liked Alex Andrade is in the district. So I just thought you might want to have that in your back pocket, Governor. We're joined today by the mayor of the city of Milton, who is yet another casualty of Andrade's lawfare tactics. You see, Alex Andrade used to be city attorney of Milton, where he literally sued the mayor. I'm happy to report that after the 2024 election, the new Milton City Council fired Andrade as city attorney.
So DeSantis gets errand boy Joel Rudman to come in to PSC and give the list of hit piece exaggerations and mischaracterizations about Alex Andrade, including importing people from Santa Rosa County and the Pitchfork Posse It's just, I mean, it's amazing stuff. Joining us now by phone, the aforementioned State Representative Alex Andrade, District 2. He did get one fact right. You know, he is the former mayor, He is the former attorney for the city of Milton. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. How's your week been?
Yeah, I mean, not nearly as interesting as yours. Okay, so did you sue the mayor? Because I remember being the city council that instructed you to sue the mayor, but maybe I misremember.
Yeah, no, I was directed by my client to go collect some public records, and I happened to be successful at it. By the way, Chris Smith and I get along just fine.
You guys were supposed to fight like at Island Fights in January or in October, and I know like you were training with Larry Downs, but I mean, what's this all about?
Nothing. I mean, Chris and I kind of like thought it might be fun, but it just didn't pan out. I mean, Chris and I have talked since Joel gave that speech, and what Joel said is not accurate. I've never had the experience of getting crushed in a Republican primary, Andrew. So I don't know what happens to your brain when you lose by like 60 to less than 10%. But apparently, it does something to your brain where the history that you've experienced is revised.
We'll just move on. It was amazing. It was really amazing. I will ask you this question. Obviously, you've had a lot to do this week dealing with Hope Florida and all that. This attack ad that DeSantis did at PSC against you and Michelle Salzman was at the same exact time as your hearing with the folks from the, you know, chairman of the board of Hope Florida Foundation, the executive director of Hope Florida, who has since resigned, and also the secretary of DCF. Do you believe it was timed on purpose at the same time?
Yeah, weird. What a coincidence. In fact, I tried to pull it up on mute on the screens in my committee room as we were going through the event at my committee meeting, but we're not allowed to use props, and that would have been deemed as a prop. I would describe Governor DeSantis' visit to Pensacola as a political prop, a stunt. He is very concerned about the revelations that have come out about how Medicaid money found its way into his chief of staff's PAC. And I think he was nervous enough to expend more taxpayer money on another political activity.
Sort of fueling the fire. Okay, let's talk more about some of the substance here because, you know, I know I reported on. I think a lot of people didn't even realize this other hearing was going on, and it hasn't been super widely reported on, at least not, I don't know, locally how much it's been reported on at all. I know I spent a lot of time on it yesterday because I thought it was very interesting. So, obviously, you know, we've done a lot of explaining the story around him, the Hope Florida Foundation, the $10 million and all of this. They had a meeting yesterday. It was defaced by hackers who were putting up, what, pornography and swastikas and things like this. They had to cancel the Zoom and start over again. But I think you might have actually shown up to testify as a just, you know, citizen.
I did. And for those who haven't fully been following, what happened was there was a settlement with ACA, with a Medicaid Managed Care Company, Medicaid money. That Medicaid money, they directed $10 million of that Medicaid money to go to the Hope Florida Foundation. Immediately upon it entering that bank account, James Uthmeyer, the governor's chief of staff, reached out to two dark money groups, told them both to ask for $5 million from the foundation. Without a board vote, both of those requests were granted. $5 million immediately left that account. And then the day after the money was wired to those two groups, they sent it to James Uthmeyer's PAC. We had a meeting about that on Tuesday, and then at this board meeting yesterday, I told this 501c3 charity, the Hope Florida Foundation, that they've been defrauded. And if they do not try and work to recoup the $10 million that they were defrauded out of by these two dark money groups, who both said they were not going to use this for political activity, they would be their IRS charity status. I mean, that's 10 of the $12 million this group has raised has gone to political activity. You cannot maintain your 501c3 status if that much money, well over like 80%+, has been spent on political activity. So if they want to maintain that status and look like they were not complicit in the money laundering and wire fraud that occurred, they have to go sue to go get that money back. Otherwise, they are complicit, and they did participate in the political activity.
What do you think is the ultimate outcome when it comes to particularly James Uthmeyer, or the executive director, or the chairman of the board, or of the foundation, or of any? I mean, do you think people resign? We've already got at least one out. Do you think there's charges pending? Like, what do you think is the ultimate end game here?
Well, there have been two resignations now. One board member of the Hope Florida Foundation resigned yesterday as well.
Oh, okay. One of the five, where they're supposed to have seven?
Yeah, so Jake Farmer.
Okay.
A lobbyist here in town. He resigned before the meeting yesterday and was immediately replaced by DCF. They appointed someone new. I am convinced at this point, based on all the information that I have, that James Uthmeyer committed money laundering and wire fraud. I believe that another individual, Governor Sanchez's personal attorney, Jeff Aaron, has as well. They both reached out personally to these two groups and told them to take this money from the Hope Florida Foundation, and then that money immediately ended up in James's PAC. So I'm convinced of what happened based on the information that I have, and I believe that federal authorities are looking into it. So we'll see.
Wow. Okay. Let's switch gears just a little bit because there's so much other stuff going on. I guess it's kind of on the same track, but it's a little different angle. One of the concerns, I think, is the governor is still the governor. You and Michelle have clearly irritated him so heavily, you with this line of questioning, her with her sponsorship of the education bill, which passed by a well beyond a veto-proof majority, supermajority, if he chooses to veto and you guys want to override. I mean, are you worried the governor's going to line item veto Escambia and Santa Rosa projects because of you guys? Because, I think that's a realistic political concern.
I'm not worried. I know it's going to happen. And that's the whole thing. With DeSantis, it's always been loyalty goes one way, and that's not really loyalty. I've known since January when our immigration fight happened that he was going to target me based on my support for Speaker Perez. So the only way that my projects, which are heavily funded right now in our legislative budgets, will actually end up coming to this community is if we do veto overrides. I believe that we will, we have the votes to conduct that veto override. So I think that's going to happen.
So presumably the governor is going to veto, assuming that it winds up passing all the way through 1321, the education bill. He's going to line item veto local spending projects that you and Michelle have gotten. Are we looking at a special session immediately after his vetoes? I mean, like in July or something? Is that what you think is going to happen?
Possibly. I think it depends on when we send in the budget. We're still in negotiations with the Senate. We have to get what's called an allocation agreed on between the two chambers before we can enter into conference, which is when we negotiate the budget between, myself and my counterpart, Jay Trumbull, in the Senate. So until we get our tax packages resolved and we have an agreement on how much we're going to tax next year, we can't start working on our allocations in conference.
Okay.
So, session might go long. We're not sure yet. I really couldn't tell you exactly a schedule for the next several months in the Florida legislature. I just know that the end result is going to have to be a veto override because DeSantis can't help himself.
Hmm. Wow. Well, pretty discouraging, but that's why you have the power to veto override. Exactly. I want to ask you, obviously yesterday in Tallahassee, you were in the Capitol. You had this horrible mass shooting, two people killed, six people wounded, and the gunman who was apparently the son of a law enforcement sheriff's deputy and used her old service weapon and maybe a shotgun that she had as well, or tried to use a shotgun. Capitol was on lockdown yesterday. Horrible event on FSU, second time in a decade, right? This happened at the library back in 2014 as well, or about a decade. I know the narrative is look at these horrible things that happen on campuses. My own reaction to this is I think, well, what if it had been my son, or what if my son had been there? And my son, who is now 21 and can buy, but would have maybe at 20 not been allowed to buy. I mean, my son would have definitely wanted to carry concealed. And if you have concealed carry on campus, with an 18, 19, 20-year-old able to protect themselves, maybe they managed to do what was done on this plane in Belize where an armed person stopped a man with a knife who was trying to kill people. Like, I know we all see things from different perspectives, but to me, the gun-free zone of campus and the under-21 gun-free prohibition, that is putting people's lives at risk. What do you think?
Listen, I've always supported bringing the age back down to 18 for people to purchase firearms, and I've always supported campus carry. I hate conflating policy discussions with these acts of violence. All I could think about yesterday was my own experience at NAS Pensacola, you know, being on base and seeing the carnage of that attack, that terrorist attack. Goodness, now well over 5 years ago.
Yeah.
That trauma was reawoken just for me as someone who, you know, was there and saw the carnage in the aftermath and saw the toll it took on people. So my heart goes out to the folks at FSU. I know exactly what the majority of folks are feeling. My heart just breaks for them.
No, I agree with that. And I do too. I guess I get frustrated because I hear one side making its claim about what we need to do to protect people. And what I always think is there is a completely other side to this issue. And every time, especially it's a college campus, you're dealing with a set of the population that could, if we were willing to let them, be in a position to protect themselves, and they can't, nor can the teachers on their behalf on a college campus. Every time I go to an event on campus, I think, well, I've got to leave my gun at home. I can keep my family safe in a restaurant. I can keep my family safe when we're at a movie theater. And I cannot keep anybody safe on a college campus because of this prohibition. And, you know, something like this reminds me of that, or reminds us of the possibility that, you know, some well-equipped younger person might also be able to do that, even if we're not there. Alex Andrade, State Representative for District 2. Alex, as always, thank you for the time. I know it's been a very, very unusual week for you. I've seen you handle it with the way you always do, and I appreciate that. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 551 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
When it comes to precious metals, there's only one place to consider, and that's Emerald Coast Coins. They're the local leader in dealing with coins and jewelry, gold, silver, diamonds, and sterling silver. Emerald Coast Coins buys, sells, and trades. And for the past 15 years, customers from all over the Gulf Coast have trusted Emerald Coast Coins for the best estimates and prices in town. Stop in today. Emerald Coast Coins on Creighton Road.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News, 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
I admit I was hot about it for a time, but that's 5 years ago. Man can't stay angry for 5 years. Can he?
Good morning, 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I just watched that over the weekend, One-Eyed Jacks with Marlon Brando and Slim Pickens, and it's a really good Western. I had not watched that one before, but that's a really good one. A couple of classic lines. It's weird to see Slim Pickens, who I think of as the guy from Dr. Strangelove, primarily, but to see him as like a bad guy, sheriff's deputy, it's just kind of an odd. Messes with my brain a little bit to watch it. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, tributes are pouring in for Pope Francis, who died this morning at 88.
Vice President J.D. Vance met Pope Francis at the Vatican on Easter Sunday, just hours before the Pope died.
Pray for you every day. Bless you.
Your friend got a lay on your jaw.
After the news broke, the vice president said his heart goes out to the millions of Christians all over the world who loved him. French President Emmanuel Macron said that Pope Francis always sided with the most vulnerable and the most fragile, and said a great pain would be felt in France and around the world. Israeli President Isaac Herzog called Francis a man of deep faith and boundless compassion who fostered ties with the Jewish world. I'm Michael Kastner.
And if you're driving to New York, apparently that congestion pricing remains on there despite the federal government's Easter deadline to end it. Drivers going into Manhattan are still paying the $9 tolls. The 129th Boston Marathon happens today. The world's oldest annual marathon begins in Hopkinton, Massachusetts, and ends at Copley Square in Boston. 30,000 runners are expected.
Well, that is not the most interesting run that took place recently. Did you see the Chinese half marathon?
Half marathon?
John, nobody?
No,
nobody saw the Chinese half marathon? Yeah, the Chinese half marathon was humans running against robots.
Oh, okay.
Running against or from?
Well, the one picture looks a lot like the other picture, okay? I mean, you know, unless the robots are in the lead, which they were not, okay? So, yeah, they had they had a huge run. This was a Saturday in China, and, you know, thousands of competitors, I guess. And then they had 20 humanoid-shaped robots, so the robots had to take the And they had human size. They had some that were like child size. I mean, there were a whole bunch of different entrants in here, 20 different ones. And, you know, some of them had to get batteries changed along the way and things like that, minor maintenance. And they weren't autonomous, is my understanding. So they kind of were semi-guided. You know, there were a lot of them had runner, had human-like accompaniment going along with them. Who do you think won? Humans or robots?
Human.
Humans. By what kind of margin?
Well, I think all the batteries died on the robots.
They did, and they weren't penalized for that. They were penalized that they had to swap it out for a new robot, like a 10-minute penalty. But it's about a an hour to run a half marathon. How long do you think the robots took?
2 hours?
Hour and a half?
3 hours.
Okay. Oh.
3 hours. So slow. It more looked like walking, like aggressive walking. You know, the old walking sport where you're not allowed to have both feet off the ground at the same time, you know? It looked a little bit more like that than it looked like genuine running. But, yeah, it's truly horrifying. Truly
well,
terrifying.
I think the Chinese are really onto something here, Andrew. But let's just play devil's advocate here.
Yeah, go on.
So I'm thinking we do the same thing, but we replace the robots that they used with robots off of that BattleBots show. You remember that?
Sure. No, yes. I loved BattleBots with saws and,
right. saws and
axes and
flamethrowers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
right.
we just... But you just use that to see how much faster
how much
you
can faster
can
a half marathon yeah. be if you're being exactly, chased by yeah. a hacksaw robot? Sure,
yeah. that's Buzzsaw. My idea.
Yeah,
not
or
sure
they
if
take
I
each other out. One
it
of
or
the
not.
Two.
Yeah.
Well, so the one thing I will say is that the robots on BattleBots are way faster than this. Most of them are really, really fast. That's odd. We still love watching that show, The BattleBots. Let's get ready. Anyway, it's good news that we're faster. It's bad news that this is as slow as the running robots are ever going to be. And this is the Chinese trying to prove that they can compete with the U.S. in, you know, humanoid-type robots. But I was not reassured. You know, the headline is Chinese robots ran against humans in the world's first humanoid half marathon. They lost by a mile. Well, they lost by more than that, actually. They lost by 2 hours. It's not encouraging to me. Not encouraging at all. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 558 here on News Radio 92.3. If you're looking for that next vehicle, Frontier Motors has a fantastic selection of good quality used cars, about 300 or so, maybe a little bit more than that on the lot, trucks and vans and SUVs and sports cars. And what they really specialize in is cars that are almost new and in great condition. You know, cars that are a year to maybe 3 or 4 years old with 10 to maybe 40 or 50,000 miles, and then they're going to warranty them to 10 years or 100,000 miles, so you know that they're going to be in good shape, they're going to take good care of you. You get that confidence of buying a new car without having to pay the high price for a new car. is kind of the idea. Now, they have such a great selection that it's a good place to go shopping and figure out what you like and drive a bunch of things and see what you like and, you know, even ask them for their advice on, you know, you might not really get to understand a car in, say, 15 or 20 minutes, but they have dealt with hundreds and hundreds of cars, and they can definitely tell you what people like, don't like, what holds their value, and so forth. So anyway, Frontier Motors, a great place to go buy good quality used cars, serving Pensacola for more than 25 years, right behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. Other stuff we got coming up today, Be My Neighbor Day is coming up, on, and that's something where you can serve and help out the neighborhood.